You are listening to Congregation Bethel of Manhattan, a two testament conservative style synagogue, serving Manhattan since 1993. Visit us on the web at bethelnyc.org.
Starting from Exodus chapter 27 and verse 20. Vata tetzaveh et bnei Yisrael, and you shall command the children of Israel, v'yikhu elecha shemen, and they shall bring to you oil, zayit, of the olive, zach, pure, ketit, pressed, l'me'or, l'ha'alot ner tamid, to be for illumination, to raise up an eternal light. Bo'ohel mo'ed, in the tent of meeting, michutz le'pa'ochet, before the presence of the curtain, or a bordering fabric. Asher al ha'edut, which is upon the testimony, v'ya'aroch oto, and you shall organize it, Acharon uvanav, Aaron and his sons, me'erev ad boker, from evening to morning, lifnei Adonai, before the Lord, chukat olam, this is an eternal ordinance, ledorotam, through your generations, me'et b'nei Yisrael, from among or by the children of Israel, meaning commissioned to be kept by the children of Israel. Va'ata, and you, hikriv elecha et Aharon, you shall bring near Aaron, achicha, your brother. This is the part of the parasha I'm going to be focusing on today. You shall bring near Aaron, your brother, v'et banav, and his sons, ito, with you, mitoch b'nei Yisrael, from the midst of the children of Israel, l'kohano, for his office, for his priesthood, it would be said, for his kohenhood, li, to me. Aaron, Nadav, the name of his son, Nadav, v'avihu, the name of his other son, Elizar, the name of his other son, v'itamar, the name of his other son. B'nei Aharon, the sons of Aaron. And here is the other part of the emphasis in the sermon. Va'asita bigdei kodesh, and you shall make holy garments le'aharon, for Aaron, achicha, your brother. You shall make holy garments. Moses had to make holy garments to glorify his brother. Le'chavod, for glory. Ultiferet, and for honor. Ultiferet, and for glory. Va'ata tedber el kol chachmei lev, and you shall speak to all those wise of heart, Asher milo tol ruach, who are filled by the spirit, chachma, of wisdom, v'asu et bigdei Aharon, and they shall all make together Aaron, garments for Aaron, likdosho, to sanctify him, likohono, for his office, li, unto me. What an interesting thing God gives for us to do. We are to construct things on the earthly level in order to glorify our brothers or our sisters in regard to the things that God has given them to do for him. The title of the sermon, I think, today is obvious, stemming from this. The title of today's sermon is You Are Sherlock Holmes. I will explain that shortly. No recording today, is it? Oh, it is recording. Okay. All right. I'm already in character. You are Sherlock Holmes. You are Sherlock Holmes. There's probably no one in the Western world who doesn't recognize that silhouette. Do you know that this character, since the day he was written, is the most portrayed in stage or film or radio since his writing? What is it? You are Sherlock Holmes. It tells us today in the parasha, it says, Va'asu v'gdei kodesh l'aharon, you are to make garments for your brother, Aaron, for honor and for glory. We're going to do that today for each other. We're going to do this for each other. Keep in mind, in Moses, we see a man raised in Pharaoh's house, royalty, a lawgiver, a leader, a military general, desert military campaign planner. Ideal background for what he was chosen to do. Aaron, raised a slave. In pharaonic Egypt's servitude, he was a temple cult slave. He was skilled with precious metals, religious ceremony, artisan priest service. God zeroed in on both of them. They were raised separately. One brother raised into royalty, the other raised in slavery. Different skills, different personalities, different backgrounds, trained for different things. He brought them together. How does this relate to us? How is this you? And how does it relate to Sherlock Holmes? Strap in. We are in a spasm of Sherlock Holmes focus right now. Again, there are two mainstream television series, one in the UK and one here in the United States. And the one from the UK is storming all over the United States too. Why again? Why Sherlock Holmes? Why Sherlock Holmes? The most portrayed character in theater or film. Why? Well, here we see the British series. Here is the American series called Elementary. There is the recent movie series starring Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law. We have the Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce team from back in the 40s, 50s. We have even Billy Wilder couldn't resist Sherlock Holmes. And on stage, William Gillette portrayed Sherlock Holmes all over the United States. Right now, Bones, the hit TV series, it's the same thing. Bones, Brennan, is Sherlock Holmes, and Booth is Watson. It's the same characters, just jiggled around a little bit. Sherlock Holmes and John Watson are a bit of a taste of why, as we step towards why, and how this relates to our parasha. Sherlock Holmes is not just Sherlock Holmes, it's Holmes and Watson. This phrase, well, the TV series is called Elementary. Why? Because this is one of the best known phrases in the English language. Elementary, my dear Watson. Elementary, my dear Watson. This is Sherlock Holmes and Joan Watson in the turnaround on the television series in the United States. Sherlock Holmes and John Watson. Why? Always Sherlock Holmes and John Watson. A leader and an aide. John Watson could never be Sherlock Holmes, and Sherlock Holmes could never be John Watson. Without Sherlock Holmes, John Watson was an assistant looking for someone to follow, and Sherlock Holmes without John Watson was a man overcome by his own quirks. Sherlock Holmes was gifted. They finally figured it out. You can't be Sherlock Holmes and not be sick. Nobody is capable of being that perceptive and being normal otherwise. They finally figured it out. He's a sociopath. He is. He's a sociopath. Gifted. He found in John Watson someone admiring. I had a bit of a personal revelation. I was reading a pastor's devotional that was talking about accepting your own uniqueness as a leader, not trying to be the pastor or the rabbi that you think the people in the pews want. Be yourself or you're dead. You have to be the version of yourself that is a rabbi or a pastor. Don't try to be the pastor or rabbi that people expect because it will kill you. Be yourself. Well, the same day I read that devotional, in the morning, in the evening, I saw the new Sherlock episode. And the teaser that came before it, and there was a moment where they recapped an episode in which Holmes originally connects with Watson. And it's the Arthur Conan Doyle scene with the watch, but they replay it in the modern era with a cell phone. Basically, Holmes has met Watson for the first time, and Watson doesn't believe that Sherlock Holmes is everything that he's heard of. So Holmes says, well, okay, small demonstration. Pull out your cell phone. Watson pulls out his cell phone, and Holmes gives it a glance, just a glance. He says, your brother's an alcoholic. You've been covering for him for years. It's a shame. It really defines your relationship. He goes into deep detail about Watson in every direction in his life. From one glance at his cell phone, Watson says, "Rubbish. You looked up things about me. You've researched me." He says, "No, I assure you, anyone can tell you. I've just met you." He says, "Then prove it to me. How can you tell all that by looking at my cell phone?" He says, "Well, that cell phone, first of all, it's too inexpensive for you. You would have bought a different one because you're a doctor, for crying out loud. So that's not your cell phone. Someone gave it to you. Now, who gave it to you? Well, it's scratched in very strange places, all over the front and the back, but it's not scratched in the areas where you would usually see it scratched. And the entry port is worn, but it's worn by someone whose hand is unsteady. They put the power plug in and they jiggle it a bunch. So that would mean the person has tremors in their hands. Why would they have tremors in their hands? Because they're an alcoholic or because they have a serious disease." He goes on and on like this for 5 minutes, all from one glance at the phone. It's why he's a heroin addict. It's to quiet his mind. This is the noise that comes into his mind all the time. Now, when he's done this, Watson looks at the phone and looks at Holmes and says, "That was amazing, brilliant." And Holmes goes like this. They're sitting in a cab. He goes, "Extraordinary." And Watson says, "What?" And Holmes says, "Well, after I do something like that, most people say, 'Bug off.' Just gets him angry. Just makes him angry." In Watson, he found someone who appreciated his uniqueness, admired it. Holmes is flawed. He is messed up, trying to deal with all the noise coming into his head. He's a messed up guy, but Watson accepts him as he is. Understands. And we find later is more like him than we can imagine, although being totally different in mental construction, the same in emotional construct. They are both sociopaths. They prove their love for each other, both of them, both men of the law. Watson, a doctor who took the Hippocratic Oath, the first line, "I will do no harm." First, do no harm. Watson commits a murder to protect Holmes' life. And then later, Holmes does the same thing to save Watson's marriage. Two champions of the law committing murder, just cold-blooded murder, to protect each other. They are limited. Holmes is limited. Watson completes what's missing. And Holmes gives Watson what Watson could never have on his own. It's Moses and Aaron. Moses and Aaron. What's the first thing we hear Moses say about himself and his abilities? He says, "I can't speak." God says, "Aaron's coming. He's a talker." The phrase in Hebrew is funny. Daber yedaber. Talking, he talks. You know people like that? I did an experiment once. There was a place in a galaxy far, far away. There was a place I was invited to speak, and I had only met the leader of this place once, and I thought, okay, we went out to lunch afterwards, like usually they do. They take the visiting speaker out for lunch. So I decided there's no better way to figure out who someone is than to just shut up and listen. So that's what I do. I do it a lot. I don't know if you noticed, I'm kind of giving away a trick of mine. I just shut my mouth and listen. This guy talked for over 2 hours straight about himself. Didn't ask me a single question about me, this work, nothing. Just talked about himself for 2 solid hours. That's not the only time I've had that experience. I've had that experience several times. Moses, "I can't speak." Aaron, "He's a talker." He's a talker. What does Moses do? Moses killed somebody that was doing something he didn't like. Sherlock Holmes. Flawed and limited, accepting and assisting. "Make for Aaron, our brother, clothing for his office, for honor and for glory." It's actually your brother. Today he's our brother. "Make for Aaron, our brother, clothing for his office, for honor and for glory." Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10 says this, "We are his workmanship." We are his workmanship. Now, that's a tough throw when you're looking at a psychopath, or a sociopath, I should say. A sociopath who finds a redeeming value in his sociopathy. He finds a way to use it for good. Is there a message in there? Sociopathy turned by sheer force of will to be applied to the betterment of society. 1 Corinthians 12, starting in verse 23. 1 Corinthians 12, 23 says this. Those parts of the body that we think to be less honorable, upon these we bestow more abundant honor. Our honored members have more abundant glory because our glorious members seem complete. But God has balanced the body together, having given more abundant honor to the part lacking, that there should be no divide in the body, but that the members should have the same care for one another. What is Sherlock Holmes without John Watson? He's a freak with no one who cares about him. What is John Watson without Sherlock Holmes? He is an exercise in aimlessness and mediocrity. Together, they are extraordinary. They save lives together. They solve the unsolvable. Make for our brother clothing for his office, for honor and for glory. Watson accepts Holmes' balance of gifts and flaws. Holmes respects what Watson brings, which he cannot. And both men serve the people and oppose their nemesis, Moriarty, whose name is a combination of Morris and Artifax, the master of death. Together they oppose Moriarty, the gifted flawed hero, the gifted aide, and the nemesis. Moriarty there in the background, unifying the two. Artists do what they do. I'm not a graphic artist, but I begat one. What artists do, and over here, the woman. I have a deep resentment of Arthur Conan Doyle on one level, because what has he left for all of us to write after he wrote The Woman? Irene Adler, whose name means a purely joyful eagle. And Conan Doyle said, Holmes always referred to her as the woman. And Conan Doyle said, she was the complete representative of her gender. Well, thanks a lot. What's left for us to write? What's left for the rest of us to write about women? This is not just a woman, this is the woman. And that's the only way that Holmes ever referred to her. She is the woman. There is only one in the world for Sherlock Holmes, Irene Adler, the woman. What a way to get women to read his book. Was it Voltaire or Rousseau? It was one of the two who said, it is the ambition of every woman to inspire an unquenchable love. I won't speak for the gender, but I'll say that, you know, it's been my experience that's not totally inaccurate. We are his workmanship, Paul wrote. God has balanced the body together. God puts Holmes and Watson together. God does it. That the members should have the same care for one another. He goes on to say this, and I cannot say to a hand, I have no need of you. Nor further can the head say to the feet, I have no need of you. A body with a head and no feet is not going anywhere. Feet with no head will not know what to do. Holmes and Watson, Watson and Holmes. In Pharaoh's house was Moses. He was raised into the arrogance and self-confidence that comes from thinking you're a god on earth. That's what Pharaoh's family thought about themselves. They were the manifestation of the sun god Ra put on earth to serve the people Egypt, or rather for the people Egypt to serve them. He was raised into law-giving, instant obedience of the people around him, driving large armies through the desert on military campaigns. He was tailor-made for this job. Aaron, serving inside the temple cult, perfectly carved, and yet both of them so flawed. so flawed. Moses' dark side costs him the right to cross the Jordan into the promised land. The anger we saw when he first murdered the Egyptian, he's there slamming the rock with his staff. He's so frustrated. I can't even imagine his state of mind. The people, he stood between the people and God and said, don't kill them. You know, if you're going to kill them, kill me too. Don't, you know, he basically interceded for and rescued the very people who, in the end, frustrated him so much that he lost his temper. And it tells us in Psalm 102, it actually verifies this, that it was God was angry with Moses because of the people and Moses' reaction to the people. And Moses says the same thing in his writings. There was an interplay of sinfulness, a synergy of sinfulness between the two of them because the people were flawed and Moses was flawed. Moses was a human too. And we don't see a new sin by Moses. We see his old sin. People don't go back. People don't backslide into new sin. They backslide into old sin. The very first thing, I mean, look at it with Abraham. Abraham, we see him at the beginning of his journey. He gets among non-believers and Sarah's there and she's beautiful. And he goes, well, say you're my sister. Very clever, you know, almost gets them both killed. Just before they're going to go into the promised land, he does the exact same thing all over again. It's not an uncommon pattern in Scripture. Moses could not do the skilled crafts in precious metal or stone, nor could he serve in priestly logistics. He had no experience at it. And Aaron could not function as a lawgiver. He was a slave. He was used to taking orders, not giving them. A leader of armies. I mean, if you the chained elephant syndrome, you know how they keep elephants in the circus? The reason elephants don't stampede and run out of the room and obey their masters is because when they're babies, they chain their legs and they habituate the elephants to walking with chained feet. The elephants don't know that they can run when they're raised in captivity. They're not habituated. They don't have it in their consciousness. I remember the first time I went to Russia and we were in a dining room where they were serving us lunch and it was basically a plate of stuff that looked like most of what we would throw away after we're done. That was what they served us for lunch. And a Coke that big. I'm usually fairly thirsty with lunch, so I asked for a second Coke, and this waiter, I'll never forget it, this is what happened. This waiter came over. You know, I asked him to come over, and he came over. I said, Yeshua Adin, pozhalsta, you know, another one, please. He went like this. His face just went blank. His eyes went dead. He stood paralyzed. I said, Yeshua Adin, pozhalsta, sechats, you know, another one. Could I have another one now, please? Blank. It took him a little while to come out of his stupor, and then he walked over to his superior, who had to go to another superior, to another. It took like a chain of command through this post-communist mentality. Eventually, another little Coke showed up, but it was like a scene out of Oliver. No one's ever asked for more. You know, more? Another one? Just, Aaron was a slave. Aaron couldn't give laws. Moses was a lawgiver. He couldn't do anything but give orders. Sherlock Plus, Watson. Here's the most amazing line in the modern series. This is where you and I come in. Holmes saves Watson's life. He saves the life of the woman he loves, rescues their marriage from disgrace publicly because of something. Well, I won't give away the story if you go to see it, but the climax of it is when Holmes declares to one of his arch enemies, terrible error that his enemy made. The error says to him as he thinks, the enemy thinks that he's triumphing over Holmes and he's waiting for the law to come and arrest Sherlock Holmes because he thinks he's won. And Holmes says, oh, do your research. I'm not a hero. He pulls out a gun. And he says, I'm a high-functioning sociopath. And he blows his head off. I know who I am. I'm not a hero, I'm a high-functioning sociopath, he says. Dr. John Watson, Sherlock Holmes tells him in a moment where Watson is bewildered at the way his life is unfolded. And Sherlock says to him, Dr. John Watson, your best friend and your wife, One of the why? Oh, I know why. I hit a when I was writing the slides, I hit a search and replace thing. I over-globalized it. Sorry. He says, your best friend and your wife are sociopaths because danger is what you like. John, you chose us both. You chose us both. John, you love danger. You're a doctor that went to war. You're a healer who kills people. John, your best friend and your wife are sociopaths because danger is what you like. We are his workmanship. Certainly, this doesn't mean it's a global approval of everything we are by nature. We have growing to do. That's why I asked you to put all that oomph behind kadosh, kadosh, kadosh. We have holiness to rise to, and we have things to learn, and we have personalities to be sharpened and iron on iron to wear away the rough edges. Certainly, we do. We are his workmanship, but look at this. I mean, Abraham chose Sarai. God chose Sarai. Rebecca chose Isaac. God chose Isaac. David chose Michal. Michal chose David. God chose Michal also, and God chose David. Joseph chose Miriam. God chose Miriam. Paul chose Barnabas. God chose Barnabas. Now, if we go through these relationships, why did Abraham choose Sarah? Let me tell you a very, very little tiny thing about kissing. There are some rabbis and pastors that tell people who date they should never kiss until they're married. I'm not one of them. You know why? Because, no, I'm not, you know, we have to be very careful. I tell everyone who dates under my, you know, whenever they ask for my counsel, I say respect the fire. The first person to come up with this great idea, oh, let's go to your apartment and watch TV together. Don't do that. You know why? Because human beings who are attracted to each other want to have sex. Shh, don't tell anybody. It's a big secret. The reason I don't say don't kiss is because of this. Tons of what we learn about a potential mate are learned on levels that are not conscious. Taste, the chemical composition of the other person. What we learn on levels that have nothing to do with our conscious minds, kissing is a part of it. There's some ridiculous percentage of women in Western civilization who believe you can learn everything you need to know about the man by the first kiss. I don't know if that's true on any level, but we learn on levels that are not conscious, that are not under our control, and you learn things from that experience. And I don't believe that it's ungodly. I think it has to be mastered like anything else. It has to be, not all things are lawful, but not all things are profitable. We have to learn. Why did Abraham choose Sarah? She was made not to be able to fulfill the greatest calling in his life. Why did Rebecca choose Isaac? This is a man upon whom she turned completely because of the very characteristics that she saw when she met him. 40 years old, living at home near his mom. His mom died. Now he needs a new woman in his life. I mean, most of the women I know would run from a guy like this. Never been married before. Women, not so much for you, but Ma, you were like really, like you were mom's kid. You were so much mom's kid that you would lie to your father. Rather, you know, that you, I'm sorry, that's the next one. That's the next generation. Rebecca lied to him, though. Turned on him, totally. Horrifying. Rebecca chose him. She chose Isaac, and Isaac chose her, and God chose them both. David chose Michal, the daughter of Saul. Really? You didn't see that one coming, King David? Couldn't see that one? Joseph chose Miriam. And then God chose Miriam. Now, this was a blindsider. I don't see how you could see this one coming. You're going to be the mother of the Messiah. I don't see that happening. I don't see that being clear. Paul chose Barnabas. Paul and Barnabas eventually separated. Barnabas was a terrible disappointment to Paul. He goes off the map and we never hear from him again. They had a terrible disagreement. Must have broken Paul's heart. He thought he had someone who was with him, like really with him, like a Watson. Barnabas was not Watson. In the top line, v'ata tetzaveh, and you shall command the children of Israel. Moses was put in charge. There were a couple experiences in the Torah where we see that people wind up having a problem with that. Moses doesn't make requests. He gives orders. V'ata tetzaveh, you shall command. He was told by God, you shall command the children of Israel. And it wasn't light. He said to bring oil that is katit, that is pressed, and zachs, that it is pure. The standard was high. It required effort to achieve what Moses commanded. And then there's Aaron and Moses. You have to make garments that glorify your brother. Give him honor. You, Moses, you've got to see to it that this is done. Every king of Israel, do you know every king of Israel had to write his own copy of the Torah under the supervision of the priesthood? The very first act of the king was to write out an entire copy of the Torah with the priesthood in charge of him. What's the message there? Checks and balances. We must each make garments of glory and honor for our husband, for our wife, for our brother, for our sister, for our son or daughter, for our colleague, for our clergy, for our calling, for our community. We have to make garments of honor. My wife and I blanch every time we watch the television and we see news commentators referring to our president as Obama, Mr. Obama. I want to stand up and say to them, that's President Obama. He is our president. Salute the uniform. Even if you don't agree with the man, salute the uniform. Too many millions of people died to make that office for you to treat it with that kind of contempt. Make glory and honor for our husband, for our wife, for our brother, for our sister. You, he says, you make garments of glory and honor for them. 10 of the spies called the land flowing with milk and honey a death trap. 2 of the spies said, it can surely be taken because God is with us. What we say about each other and how we treat each other and whether we glorify the calling that each of us has. This is serious stuff. Proverbs says that a foolish woman tears down her house with her own hands. I think you could substitute the word mouth there too. And it goes in both directions. It's not just one gender. A fool tears down the household with their own words, their own mouth, their own actions. Aaron had only the glory that his brother would willingly construct for him. Wife, do you want to treat your husband like a fool? You can. You can make him feel like an absolute dirtbag loser. He can walk out the door and feel like nothing in that world is ever going to go his way. You can help him feel that way. Or your words and actions can make him feel otherwise. Husband, you can make your wife feel disregarded, lonely, misunderstood, and unappreciated. If that's your ambition, you can pull it off. You're the one person in the world that is suited to the job. Or you can make her feel like you're the only guy in the world who totally gets her, that she is the woman. She's not just a woman. She is the woman. And believe me, the rewards that you will reap in peace and in harmony and in blessing are beyond counting, both genders. What garments of honor and glory will we make today for our family members? For our city? Do you know how many people in this city I've heard say, ugh, I never wanted to live in this town. Really? I never wanted to live in New York. This isn't what's natural for me. I would really like a mountain vista and trees, or I'd like the ocean front. You know why God invented the ocean, right? Jackie Mason said, doubles the value of the real estate. Now, he got a big laugh from that line. I tried to do it casually, you know. I tried to do the British understatement thing. But this isn't Britain. This is America. You know what? It's really interesting. The American analogy to Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes is the British national hero. Cerebral. The closest parallel we have in America, John McClane. The hero of the Die Hard movies. Or Wyatt Earp, if you want to go more classical. The Wild West, shoot 'em up. John McClane, they can't even resist doing it. In the Die Hard movies, what does John McClane do when he kills the nemesis? like an old Western hero. He blows the smoke off of his gun and says, yippee-ki-yay, and that's just a word I can't say here. But he quotes Roy Rogers, yippee-ki-yay, person with a dysfunctional relationship with one of your parents. Billy, you know the joke I'm thinking of, right? That cartoon? Yeah. Correct. There's this nerd doing beautiful, he's like got beautifully calligraphed poetry on a wall, and some street artists, you know, rappers come, like they're standing next to him. They're obviously from the graffiti culture, and this nerd is there. He's like this. And the caption reads, well, the caption reads, correct grammar and punctuation may not be street, but that's the way I roll. And then he says the word. We have to make garments of honor and glory for one another, because without Watson's appreciation, Sherlock Holmes is just a sociopath. And when he shows other people what he can do, they just get angry because he can. It just makes them angry that he can do this stuff. Everybody wants to believe that what they are has redemptive value and can be loved. That someone else sees what they genuinely are and validates it. Doesn't say, so glad that you agreed to marry me, so now I'm going to change you. Now that you're married to me, I'm going to reconfigure you into my mind's idol of what it is that I want you to be. No, validating what the person is. My favorite line in this entire series, brilliant writing, poetic. I've cried through some of these episodes because I love poetry so much and I see it so rarely in modern drama. These people that write this series are poets. Brennan is a sociopath and Booth is Watson. And Cyndi Lauper playing the psychic. I'm no fan of psychics. I don't believe in them. Yada, yada, yada. You know, not an approval of psychic stuff. Okay, just an observance of poetry. Cyndi Lauper delivers this line like a champion of an actress. She says to Brennan, who is afraid she can never be loved. No one will ever love her. People just don't like her because she's Holmes. Cyndi Lauper says to her about Booth, he has seen the truth of you. And he is dazzled. We are his workmanship. I don't know what you are, and I don't know what you can do. Chances are there's stuff you're really good at, and there's stuff at which you stink. Welcome to the club. That's all of us. Stuff at which we're good, and stuff at which we're blind. We are his workmanship. He or she has seen the truth of you, and he or she is dazzled. We serve each other. We see the truth about each other, positive and negative. We struggle to accept. We struggle to grow. We struggle. That's part of what we do. But we also appreciate. We also admire. Admire. How empowering is it? Have you noticed this? Have you ever spoken admiringly to someone in regard to what they do and watched the reaction? To this day, I get into cabs in New York whenever I use them, and the cabbie says to me, where do you want to go? And I say, well, this is the route I'd go, but if I knew what I was doing, I'd be sitting up there and you'd be back here. Why don't you choose the route you think is best for the traffic today? I've had cabbies like look at me in the mirror and smile like, wow, respect. Respect. Who knew? We are his workmanship. Let's bow our heads in prayer. Heavenly God, we come to you because we are, each of us, Sherlock Holmes. We are a composite of abilities and inabilities, Our strengths have the tendency to puff us up, and our inabilities have the tendency to make us very sad. But each of us have that balance. As human beings, we strive to be somewhere in the middle, to be what the composite of Holmes and Watson would be, a balanced human being. What Moses called a person who has wisdom in accord with the number of their days. We come to you, Abba, today because our Messiah, Yeshua, modeled this for us, and his model is in some ways so overt, and in some ways it is incomprehensible. We look at him and we see him doing things that are very easy to understand, and there are times when his behavior is just cryptic. But he modeled for us. He was not only the way for us to be in relationship with you, but he is also the truth and the life. He's a place where we can go to find the paradigms, the examples that will guide us, and teaching that will lead us, even if his example isn't direct, that will lead us to other more direct examples. And we ask you to help us with that relationship today, to God, to Messiah, with each other. We come to you with what we each are. Sincerely, from our hearts, we ask you to help us with our own balance of these things, and when we interact with others, to be able to see their glory, to be able to make garments appropriate earthly reactions to, and things that foster the perception of that person's individual glory, their calling. We look to you for all of this. We who are brothers to each other and sisters to each other and husbands and wives and fathers and children and aunts and uncles and fellow employees and fellow citizens. We look to you for this, Abba, in the name of the one who died and rose to enable us to live this more than we ever could in this life and to carry us into the next, Yeshua of Nazareth, our Messiah, who was not Sherlock Holmes. He was the author. In his name we pray. Amen.
Shalom, and thanks for listening. Before we sign off, may we ask you to consider these thoughts also? For 20 years, Bethel has been serving in Manhattan, one of the most financially challenging places in the entire world. If you enjoy and feel nourished by these podcasts, we invite you to partner with us by making a generous one-time or repeating gift through our website, www.bethelnyc.org. It is so very easy to do, and every gift means so much towards reaching and teaching the Jewish population of Manhattan about Yeshua our Messiah, as well as providing faith community life for those who come to believe. Thank you for whatever you can do, and we hope our podcasts continue to be helpful to you. Shalom.